All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. It's a podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight we're going to be talking about the Prime Minister of Australia's favorite movie, apparently, as he made reference to it recently in a public speech where he was talking about the reemergence from the lockdowns or something along those lines, or what needs to be done in order to be able to reemerge from the lockdowns. He made reference to the Croods movie. I'm sure we'll be talking about that with our guest in a few moments, but you can find the show notes more for this at actualanarchy.com/249. And before we introduce our amazing guest, a multi-time returning guest, let's say hello to Robert, my hetero life mate and across the state divide. How's it going over there?
What's up, Daniel? How's it going, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show. This is a pleasure, an honor, and a privilege to be on with you again, listening to your sultry voice over the magical airwaves.
Yeah, and while we still are on the airwaves, we did about 35 minutes of just ranting about taboo subjects on the pre-show bonus content available for our Patreon supporters. If you want to listen to that, while it's still available, go to actualanarchy.com/Patreon. Before it gets memory hold, like many things, such as the definition of herd immunity or the American Pediatric Association's various articles about the importance of seeing human faces in the development of a child's cognitive abilities. These things seem to be changing and being removed as we go into this brave new world of what will probably be the fall of civilization and back to the caveman times, which is an appropriate thing as we were talking about the caveman movie, The Croods.
Yeah, Daniel in the pre-show sounded like he'd swallowed like the whole bottle of black pills. So he's not feeling great. It's hard not to sympathize with him. I've seen some rather disturbing footage out of Australia, and there was a recent mandate by British Columbia, which is just to the north of us, where they say that you have to be vaxxed in order to go to a restaurant or go to a movie theater or go to a sporting event or go to a fitness center or any number of these places where supposedly these are the spreading event places, not like a supermarket or any other kind of thing. And then there's no exemptions for whether you can or cannot get the, like, if you're immune compromised, you can't get the vaccine. Tough shit. If you have a religious exemption, tough shit. Daniel, he said to me, you know, non-compliance is the way that's exactly how I live my life. So I completely agree with that, but it is worrisome. So I understand why he has swallowed all the darkness. And these are the trial balloon places, these totalitarian places. And then it, you know, they work as hard as they can to get it here. And they're like, well, look, it's working in Canada and Australia so well. So we gotta do it here. And so it's coming to a theater near you.
Yeah, very, very, very unfortunate and apt reference for the type of show that we do here. I do have a bit of a white pill, and that is the presentation in Colorado. There was an event in Colorado by the Mises Institute that Jeff Deist and John Tamney and Ryan McMacken, both or all three of them, gave talks about living in a post-COVID world, or basically the effects of what's been happening and where they see things going. And there were some white pills in that. I also get some white pills from like Michael Malas and Dave Smith occasionally, but it seems like the white pills, the effects wear off pretty quickly. So I feel better for like, you know, 20 minutes, and then I see headlines or people I know on social media making comments, and I'm just like, we're so fucked.
It's hard to disagree with that sometimes, and it's easy to wallow in the negativity. I think if you were to talk to the average person and have a rational discussion with them, they would have some questions, they'd have some pause, but it's far easier to just put the mask on and go along to get along than it is to stand up and challenge and be the one person that's standing out from the crowd when they're not ready for that argument. They're not ready to stand up to the Karen bullies. So it's unfortunate, but I have some faith in humanity that we do still have humans with thinking brains. They're just lazy or just, it's just the nature of humanity that, you know, you're not always ready for a fight. So you get involved in your life and you're not ready to throw down at any given moment. I live more along the lines of, I'm ready to just throw down. Just come at me, bro. I don't care. Even if I don't have all the best arguments at the top of my head, like all the time, I'll still go toe to toe with you regardless. But I haven't been challenged on the masks yet, and I'm looking forward to that still being the case. That would show at least some level of resistance in the herd.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think in person is probably the best route with people that you know, and that social media is not a very effective tool when it comes to having a dissenting opinion. Not only is it getting censored and removed and people are getting suspensions for it, but then you get mobbed by the people who have bought the blue pill.
Indeed you do.
And it's false moral high ground.
Right, right. And it's easier to be a keyboard warrior than it is to challenge somebody face-to-face.
Yeah, indeed. Well, speaking of face-to-face, let's bring on that fresh face of Rachel Kennerly after this brief announcement from our Last Nighters intro music. And we'll get into this episode on the Croods.
Yeah.
Woo, woo. Rugga bugga. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson, and we are the Last Nighters. You can find us at lastnighters.com and also on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel. This is episode 192 of this year's show. We're going to be talking about the Croods for episode 192. You can find the show notes more at lastnighters.com/192. I think I've said that three times now. Maybe Candyman will then come out and get me. So I better go hide in my cave, like Scott Morris in the PM of Australia likes to talk about. But anyway, our guest is, of course, the wonderful, the great Rachel Kennerly of not only one, but two podcasts. She runs Cannabis Heals Me and also Just Add Liberty. Both are excellent. And she is a great, great person and has been a guest with us several times in the past for a wide variety of genres of different movies. So we cannot pigeonhole her in any way. She's been on for M. Night Shyamalan's The Village. She's been on for Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. She's been on for... there was like a Halloween-y movie. Didn't we do something like that? I forget what it was, but
Zombieland.
That's right. Yeah. So wide variety, and in a way that's good because any movie can come up and we can say, hey, Rachel, let's do that one. And you're more than willing to come on. It took us a little while to land on this one. We were also considering The Long Kiss Goodnight, which coincidentally our guest for the Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, he actually brought that up independently as a potential cool Christmas movie.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. That's a great idea.
So it'll be a toss-up between you and him, or maybe we all four combine forces Voltron style and do an episode. That might be a lot of fun as well. But anyway, why don't you just remind people what your shows are about and where they can find them, please?
Well, the podcast Cannabis Heals Me, it's kind of on a pause right now because I started a new podcast, but on Cannabis Heals Me, we talk to people about their medical cannabis stories. And then further back on further episodes, we did kind of cannabis related issues where we talked about jury nullification, like I said, cannabis related topics, and then also medical cannabis stories of people who have actually used the plant and experienced healing in their own lives. And then on the podcast, Just Add Liberty, we talk about simple and sometimes not so simple ways to add liberty to your life, whether it's homeschooling, entrepreneurship, getting a side hustle, getting out of debt, topics like that. You know, the way life changed in 2020 kind of got me to reevaluate what I was focusing my efforts on and kind of just be more about, hey, let's talk about homesteading or prepping or preparing for a world where we have to show our ID to get in the door to buy groceries. So maybe we need to learn a little bit about gardening at the house, but we explore topics like that and ways that people can bring a little bit of liberty into our life, because when the boot of the government is on your throat, you don't feel very free. Well, these are some steps that you can take proactively to maybe bring a little peace and security to your life, even in spite of what the government's trying to do to you.
Yeah. And I think that's especially necessary these days. Every little bit helps. And I've listened to, I think, almost every episode. So I do recommend it. And it's fun because, like, I know you personally, you know, just from being a guest, and we've chatted back and forth on Messenger. And when I listen to your podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, my friend Rachel's having a conversation with me.
Well, I do try to keep it more conversational, because I dislike listening to interviews where you can tell the person's reading from a list of questions and there's that like awkward pause and not a very smooth transition to the next thing. And so even if I'm like, oh man, I get off of it and I'm like, man, I meant to ask him about this. You know, it just is what it is. I don't want them to feel like I'm the Spanish Inquisition when they come on the show. We just try to have a nice conversation that, you know, you kind of feel like you're eavesdropping on, or you're just a quiet third party listening.
Yeah. Yeah. Cannabis heals me laid back. Your money on your mind.
Oh yeah, baby.
All right. Well, thanks again. And people can find the show notes and more with all the links to your prior appearances and your two other shows, or your two shows. Yeah. It's almost like I'm saying your other shows, because you've been on our show so much. It's like, this is also kind of your show.
Well, it's always fun. I love coming and talking to y'all about movies. I like watching movies, and I like talking about them, like breaking them down and critiquing them as I watch them and saying, well, why is that? Da, 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 da. And yeah. Nobody in my family enjoys me doing that. So it's nice to have an outlet here with you guys.
Well, if I recall, one of our first interactions was you telling me how we ruin movies.
Yes. Yes. You ruined Star Wars. Golly.
Rogue One.
Yes. You ruined Rogue. I'm like, I really liked that movie before I listened to you guys tear it apart. And now I can't, I haven't ever watched it again because of you guys. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
if you like, not that I'm trying to get people to quit watching y'all shows, but if you like like channels that talk about movies and kind of tear them apart and dissect them, there's this YouTube channel called Cinema Sins. And basically they just tear a movie apart. And so if it's a movie I like, I will not watch it. But if it's a movie I don't like, I'm like, okay, I'll watch that because I didn't like that movie anyway.
All right. Fair warning. Well, I'll put our Rogue One episode on the show notes page as well, which is lastnairs.com/192.
If you love the movie, don't watch that episode.
That's right. You know, actually, in retrospect, I think I have fonder memories of that movie that I think if I rewatched it, I would have a different opinion. And that's the beauty of art and being able to interpret it at different points in your life after, you know, different learnings and being in a different mindset. So I have a feeling I will like it more and maybe appreciate it
especially compared to the garbage that came out afterwards.
Oh yeah. 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 The relative, the luster from the relative garbage will make it even better. Yes, I agree. All right. So, I'm going to bring up the Google description. How we start off here. It's going to take me just a moment and a half. Is that showing up for everyone here in about 2 seconds? There we go. And Robert, if you could give me the signature sound from this movie. Right about now, my funk soul brother.
Ah!
Dun, dun, dun! That's what I'm looking for. All right. So we are, of course, talking about The Croods, which came out, when did this come out? It says here... 2013, and then a more recent one came out, part two came out just last year, I think. So here we go. 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 72% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 4 out of 5 on Common Sense Media, with 84% of Google users liking it. The description reads, prehistoric family, the Croods, live in a particularly dangerous moment in time. Patriarch Grug, played by Nicolas Cage, his mate Uga, Catherine Keener, teenage daughter Eep, Emma Stone, son Thunk, Clark Duke, and feisty Grand Cloris Leachman gather food by day and huddle together in a cave at night. When a more evolved caveman named Guy, played by Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool, arrives on the scene, Grug is distrustful, but it soon becomes apparent that Guy is correct about the impending destruction of their world. Release date, March 22nd, 2013. Directors Chris Sanders, Kirk DeMico. Mills, music by Alan Silvestri, with a budget of $135 to $175 million, with a story by John Cleese among the directors as well. And Robert, this made, I think, $587.2 million, so it made a profit. And what is your take on the opening salvo, please? Wow.
This is one of those movies that did way better than I thought it would. There's, you know, they started pumping out these crap animated movies. Like, the technology got so good that it became really, really easy to make these things. And of course, you know, Pixar still is the cutting edge, and they develop technology to make it even look even better. But there's this B tier of developers that make this, just pump out this garbage. And that's what I thought Croods was. I saw some advertisements for it, and the advertisements looked garbage. And the opening 20 to 30 minutes of this movie looks terrible. But then they escape after their cave breaks, and then, like, right behind the cave is this beautiful vista. And so then the movie gets a lot looks a lot better. It is DreamWorks, so they know what they're doing. They've been making movies ever since, what, Shrek in like the mid 90s or whatever. So they're not slouches when it comes to this. I wouldn't say that they're the cutting edge, but they're competent in the stuff. And you know, the story is, I think it's ripe for discussion, especially in today's world, for sure. It's fairly basic, but it plays with some fun themes that I think that are right up our alley. So yeah, it's going to be a good discussion. I appreciate it. I know you guys thought I was going to be angry, but it's not that I'm only upset when we're doing movies where there's nothing to talk about, where it's either funny or it's not funny. This movie, I don't even think it was funny, but it's got content. There are themes that are directly applicable. There are economic themes, which I was surprised by. There's like one of the Ryan Reynolds character is like this caveman Einstein guy, which I think is a direct allegory to an actual real life event. Well, time period, which I can get into later on. So that'll be fun. But anyway, it's actually a pretty decent movie. I wouldn't put it up there with like Pixar's best. I wouldn't say it's something as good as like Up, or I can't even think of another great Pixar movie. There are good ones. A Wall-E.
Inside Out's good. Wall-E's good. Yeah.
Inside Out, it's okay. Yeah. So I wouldn't put it up in that echelon, but I would put it in the solidly entertaining area. So that's it's not a bad place to be in, especially for a lot of the schlock that gets pumped out.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. It's interesting because I agree that the first 20 minutes or so don't look nearly as good as the final 80 or 90 minutes. But I think that most of my content is from that first 20 minutes where they're talking about why they're hiding and what they're afraid of and how they're not going out at all. Because they're afraid of everything that might pose any minor amount of risk. And of course, the daughter Eep is like resentful of this because she's basically saying anything fun or new is forbidden, which of course, right, as a precocious teenager, when you're told no, what do you want to do? The exact opposite.
Right.
Which I need to remember that for about 6 years from now. For sure.
It won't be that long, Daniel.
I mean, so were you on the point where you were pretty much saying Nick Cage is a terrible dad? Because I thought he actually had a lot of good reasons for doing what he did.
I don't think he was being necessarily terrible. I think he was being overly cautious, overly protective. And it was, it gets down to, I think, one of the main cruxes of what I want to talk about is, what is a life worth living? Is mere survival, Tom Woods has talked about this numerous times in his email newsletters and on his podcast, when especially related to current events, is mere sustenance, is living in the pods, in the matrix, sustaining the machines with your biological energy while, you know, being jacked in so you feel like you're in a life. Is that enough? Is mere biological existence enough? Or is there something more to life that makes it worth living? Is there something more that is what we call humanity? And I think that would be a thing we can discuss further, but I want to get Rachel in on this. What's your take on the opening here and Robert's opening comments as well?
I'm not a movie snob necessarily. And this was, my son was 4 when this came out. This was probably, it was released, I guess, probably around the same time that he came into our home. And so we watched kid movies. You know, before that, we didn't really, we would take the nieces and nephews to see kid movies. But this was probably one of the first ones that we took him to the theaters to see. And I think maybe when we had, you know, because at one point we had 4 kids. And I can remember watching this with all 4 kids. So, I mean, as far as like the quality of the movie or whatever, at the first of it, I mean, it was just entertaining. The kids thought it was funny because there's a lot of, you know, slapstick humor, Three Stooges type humor. So, I mean, the kids enjoyed it. People are falling down and breaking things and getting tripped and babies are attacking things. So the kids loved it. And whatever keeps the kids, you know, entertained momentarily so that they're not fussing and arguing, it was great.
Yeah, it did seem like the humor in this was the physical, like almost violent humor that didn't seem to have any consequences or repercussions.
No, none whatsoever. But grandma's being thrown all over the place and she doesn't break a hip.
Yeah, these characters are made out of rubber.
Yeah, yeah. Yet and that's the other thing. They're so careful about certain things, but then like all the cliffs and all the running and all the things that they do, like they jump off that cliff to escape that cat monster, owl monster thing or whatever it is. They do a lot of things that I would consider high risk, especially for those who seem to have a very, very low risk tolerance. But speaking of kids movies, obviously, because I have kids, we're watching a lot of kids movies. We watched the My Little Pony one a couple of years ago. We recently watched the new Paw Patrol movie, and it's surprisingly good. I don't know if it's worthy of an episode, but the premise is these private police and fire department heroes that go and save people from calamities stage a coup against a suspiciously elected politician who is using his position of power to his own aggrandizement and seizes some scientific apparatus, misuses it and abuses it for his personal gain with no concern for the consequences of using this, causing all sorts of chaos and havoc. And that is, it's resolved pretty neatly in that he ends up going into jail by the end of the film. So Paw Patrol, the movie, check it out.
Sounds great, Daniel.
It actually doesn't sound that bad.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's my kids said that it's their favorite movie right now. I think they said favorite, or they said that they really, really, really like that movie. And then we watched Croods. They're like, yeah, Croods is okay. We like Croods, but it's not Paw Patrol.
It's true. It's a very true statement.
Yeah, it's not Paw Patrol. So anyway, Robert, let's go down the path of what is your hot button issue related to this? You said that you had a couple of things you wanted to bring up that were like just meaty, juicy taste for us to go over here.
Well, we can start talking about what you wanted to talk about with the opening of the movie, where Nick Cage is keeping the whole family perhaps overly protective. Now, you know how the millennials are with their kids and how they're like bulldozer parents or they are helicopter parents. And because they generally have very, very few kids and they want, and that healthcare has gotten so good to the point where, you know, pretty much if you have a baby, it's going to live. Back in human history, even just a couple hundred years ago, you would have, you know, maybe like 7 or 8 kids with the hope that 3 or 4 of them would survive. So you didn't get so much attached to your kids until they got to be 1 or 2 years old and they were strong enough and you knew they were going to make it. There were lots of, like a lot of indigenous peoples don't even name their kids until they get to be a few years old. At least they haven't for a long time. Maybe they do nowadays. I don't know. But it was just the nature. It was a way to protect yourself as a parent, to gird yourself against the inevitable death of half of these kids that you wouldn't necessarily get super attached to them.
Wasn't that a similar thing in, was it Sparta, where they would put a kid out in the woods overnight, and if it survives, could be like a warrior?
That's one of the things they did. Before that, though, there's a council. Whenever a new child was born, they'd throw them before this old man council. And the old man council would kind of poke it and prod it and decide whether it was fit to live or not. And the ones that passed it muster were ever given back to the moms. The ones that didn't get thrown off a cliff. So
that's a lovely thought. Wow.
It's human beings used to be a whole lot tougher. They used to be put up with a whole lot more death. And they used to be a whole lot, you know, you just couldn't let it affect you, or else you couldn't function with all the death you saw all the time. So in defense of Nick Cage's character, it's a little bit strange that he is like this, because normally they'd have a bunch of kids, they would just die, and they just keep on going. But in this movie, where there's no other people, like they're all alone, everybody else is dead. And he's the only one that's successfully kept these people alive. And they are super, super precious to him, because there's not a whole lot of chance of making a whole lot more people. In fact, it was weird that, I mean, I know it's a kid's movie and whatever, and there's a storyline and you have modern sensibilities on these prehistoric characters. I get it. But if he was more realistic, he would have been super happy to see Guy and been like, holy shit, more people. And yeah. I got a daughter right here. You guys get it on right now, because there's a chance we could make more human beings. This is fantastic for us. This is great news. But in this movie, you know, he's like the reluctant dad and, you know, don't touch my daughter, that kind of thing. Classic, normal, modern day human type thing. Because they're playing to a modern audience, I understand. But I tend to forgive him because he's working with the tools he has. He's a fairly stupid man. He's very strong. And he's just doing so far the cave thing has worked out for him. And that's the best he knows how.
And he's seen all these other families die.
So in this world, like in today's world, human beings are the apex predators. We got guns. We got technology. We can take down anything we want. In this crude's world, they're like about in the middle of the pack. They can take out some stuff, but a whole lot of stuff can take them out. And I tend to side with Nick Cage on this one, that he's doing the best job he can. He's working with limited brain, and you know, he's got to crack some heads to keep him in line. Now, when Guy comes along and shows him, adds new things to the mix, right? He's this new entity that brings all this new technology. At first, he is resistant because he feels put out of place. Like, hey, this is my job. You guys need to respect me. I've been doing this job this whole time. And all of a sudden this new guy comes along and I'm, you know, not even, I'm just like the old, and then he's the new, and what am I, just like garbage now? But he does eventually come to see the benefits of what Guy brings, and he embraces it. So I'm kind of a fan of his character in this movie. I think it's a little bit quick and unearned in the fact that at the end he all of a sudden is like, oh, go ahead and take risks. Yeah, it's all good. Don't worry about it. We're fine. There's no dangers. Who cares? We're like awesome now. That's a little bit on the too fast for me side. Like, they're still not apex predators. I mean, they can ride mounts now at the end, which is a huge advantage. Huge advantage. It puts them almost on equal footing to the big apex predators.
It's at least still getting. It's a little fast. They should have bought you dinner first.
It's a little bit fast and unearned. I wanted him to still acknowledge the dangers of the world instead of being at the end being like, oh, let's just kick ass now. We're totally cool. Let's not even worry about caves at all. That was a dumb idea. That was dumb, crude guy. And now we're in the new era. That's a little bit quick for me, but I get it. It's a movie.
Yeah. I could see the premise of we've got this Luddite caveman and this smart caveman with developing technology, and you've got them going on this like little bit of a journey and playing the odd couple kind of against each other a little bit as sort of the kernel of the idea. And for some reason, seeing John Cleese's name attached to this makes me think that that is kind of the thing he was kind of going for, because this movie isn't as funny as one would think it was going to be with John Cleese being a writer on it.
Yeah, although I don't know if John Cleese is, I mean, he's what, like almost 80 now? So
it would have been 10 years ago or longer.
Still be in his 70s.
Yeah.
Late 60s, early 70s at some point. I mean, I don't know exact age, but he's definitely, and as people age, they're still somewhat funny, but I don't think that they're as genius as they are, you know, with that brilliant comedic action when they're in their earlier years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe for him, I could see him thinking, you know, the juxtaposition of those two kind of, they're both cavemen, but one is, you know, more advanced, the other's not. And that's like funny enough on its face, just the premise of it.
Right. And what I wanted to get into a little bit, or just to mention, was that this might be, they might've gotten inspiration for the story from a real period in history where Homo sapiens, the big brain, us people, were living alongside Neanderthals in Europe and the Middle East. And there's evidence that we procreated with them. There's also evidence that we killed a whole lot of them. And eventually, obviously, they died out and we went on to conquer the planet. But the Neanderthals...
Or assimilated them with the breeding?
Probably somewhat. But they essentially died out, and probably most likely due to their inferior brain power and their inferior use of tools and that kind of thing. So, you're dumber, you're not as able to create and produce value, so people don't want to trade with you. Economic reasons, eventually, you know, you're going to be less desirable. And then in this movie, it's the same kind of thing. Like, his old dumb ideas are alongside this new Homo sapien human who is just like this Einstein, showing everybody how to actually live in this world. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah. The one thing that I get, it's a kid's movie, and so they didn't need to develop like more of the civilization per se, but it really seemed as if Guy was from a distinctly different species.
Yes.
And that there should have been more like him in a society.
Yes.
Of these more advanced beings. And it sort of makes sense that the Croods would be like the last remaining, you know, Neanderthal types hiding in the caves for fear of, you know, all the things that took out their other members of their society. I thought it interesting that a cold killed one of the tribes or one of the families.
One of the families just wiped them out, the common cold.
Yeah.
It'll do yeah. it.
A little premonition, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But Rachel, let's get you in on this. What do you think of the protective nature? Do you think it seems as if, especially if we consider the cognitive abilities of the patriarch in this movie, it sort of makes sense that he would stick with what he knows that's gotten them through these things that he's seen firsthand take out other families.
Well, like you mentioned before, he watched all their neighbors die. And so in common terms, he's like, well, I got to do whatever I need to do to protect my family. I mean, I guess my biggest complaint with the movie, it's like most kids movies or kids shows. It's like the dad is stupid and the kids know more. The mom knows more. The kids know more. The dad is just a dumb. I want to say another word, but we would definitely get kicked off for that. But that always gripes me is watching these shows where the dad is just a moron and the mom and the kids know better than the mom than the dad. But I mean, on this, the brother and the dad are morons. So I guess it's not just one moron is two, and both of them are guys, but maybe they balance that by making the other guy the smart guy. But I mean, I don't blame him. And you know, one of the things that I'm like, because Eep snuck out of the cave one night trying to find this light that woke her up. And so she leaves the whole family exposed to this cat thing that's been prowling around. So she sneaks out and leaves her whole family exposed. I mean, she put them all at risk by leaving. I mean, it's like, at least close the door behind you so that they don't get, your family doesn't get eaten. So, I mean, I understand why he did. Yeah.
I mean, I know she knew that she would be breaking the rules to leave, but she was fascinated by this light, and it was the first time any of them had seen fire. So to not think that the other ones would also be equally fascinated. I mean, maybe the dad would be like, yeah, it's not enough to go outside, but I mean,
did
whatever.
She really put them at risk though? I mean, if I recall, she opened it a crack and squeezed out.
Well, it could have put them at risk for something else that's smaller than the cat.
Dude, the common cold is going to sneak in that hole.
That's true. No, it probably would not. The back then, the virus particles were much larger than the cave hole openings.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to get a fact check on this here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when the dad went out, ugh, he would have had to open the door even wider, right? So when they get back to the cave, is the boulder out of the way? Is it like the third day of Easter, or what's going on? Do you guys remember, or what did Grug close it back up before they went back? Because now I'm curious. Because who let the dogs out? Who left the door open?
Don't remember.
Yeah.
Who's trying to heat up the outside?
That is a good question. Did they all go out with him though? Because he told his wife she's gone, and I can't remember if he was the only one that went out or if.
If I recall, it was just
Grug up there
finding her up there, and
just
then
him, yeah,
yeah, and then they had to
and
get
then
back.
He brings her back down, and she has the little thing that she blows, and they all destroy it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah, and they come back from being up on that plateau in the middle of the night with the fire with the guy, and then when they get back to the cave, it's morning, so it seems like it took a while.
But either it took a while or it was just about to be morning when that hole went down.
Well, in the opening sequence, when they're all trying to get this egg, you know, they come out in the morning, and then by the time they get the egg, it's time for them to go back in the cave. And then also, that's a lot of calories they expended to go get that egg. How's that caveman fat if they all have to share one? I mean, granted, it's a good size egg, but if they're all just sharing one egg, how's the brother fat and how is the dad strong? Seems like they would have tried to take down the big bird instead of that little tiny egg.
Look, don't ask questions. All right. It's a kid's movie. It doesn't have to make sense.
Listen, it's science. Okay. You're not supposed to question
science. You don't question the science.
That's my problem.
So, Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister of Australia. Australia is basically the blueprint for probably what's coming with the totalitarian lockdowns and whatnot. But he made reference to this movie. And if I recall, he said something along the lines of, it's like that girl Eep from the Croods movie, where you want to get out there, but there's dangers. Now, let me see exactly what his quote was. It's like that movie, The Croods. Scott Morrison likens COVID plan to cartoon. It was in a video. His quote says,
"Well, it is rather cartoonish."
Yes. While appearing on Channel 9's Today, Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison compared the country's COVID exit strategy to the 2013 animated film, The Croods. Quote, "Now, it's like that movie in The Croods. People wanted to stay in the cave. And that young girl, she wanted to go out and live again and deal with the challenges of living in a different world. Well, COVID is a new, different world, and we need to get out there and live in it. We can't stay in the cave, and we can get out of it safely. That's what this plan does." So, in a way, I'm sort of like, that seems to run counter to what I seem to be seeing happening in Australia. It's almost as if he's saying, hey, we almost need to just realize that COVID exists, and we need to continue living life. But that seems to run counter to all the lockdowns happening in Melbourne and Sydney and all these other areas where they're arresting people for being more than 5 kilometers out of their house or being out watching the sunset. They're smashing protesters, shooting them with rubber bullets and tear gassing them. Do you guys know more about this? Is this just like a disconnect of the prime minister on the national level versus what's happening in the municipalities and in the individual regions of Australia that are doing more of the lockdown type stuff? Because he actually sounds like he's open to the idea of we're going to reopen.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about it. I do know, obviously, that Australia is a very, very large place. It's a very rural place. Just the tiny little coast area is actually populated. And Melbourne and Sydney, Melbourne, I think, is the main source of where the protests are. That's the main source where the lockdowns are. They've been locked down for so long. And that place is mostly just kind of a police state at this point, for sure. But the governments over here, they can bluster all they want. And they have their main enforcement thugs in these populated areas to kind of serve as examples for everybody else, and they kind of hope that everybody else lives that way too and pays attention and cowers in fear of their mighty power. But it's way too big and way too thin of a population for them to actually enforce all this crap nationwide, much like here. So
yeah, it's like the Larkin Rose video, the tiny dot.
Indeed.
Yeah, there's only so many enforcers now. Granted, they have indoctrinated a sufficient amount of your fellow citizenry to change that
serve
equation, the calculus.
Service brown shirts. Yes.
Yeah.
The brown shirt army is alive and well. Let's talk about this notion of the fear keeping us alive. So you had the example of the Tom Woods quote where it's not necessarily just because you're alive doesn't mean you're living, or just because you're living doesn't mean you're alive, one or the way, either way. There's even a line by Eep in this movie that says, like, there's a difference between living and not dying. Now, in Nicolas Cage's defense, he just said fear keeps you alive. He didn't say it made you live. He wasn't really considering the quality of life. He was just more concerned about the quantity of life.
But it is a necessary prerequisite to, quote unquote, living a human life. You have to have that biological existence as a base.
Right. Now, he's right on a certain level that fear does keep you alive for the most part, or at least knowledge, I would say, keeps you alive.
When the fight or flight response.
Right. Fear of everything can be paralyzing, though. Fear of the dark, there's good reason for human beings to be afraid of the dark. Historically, right? I mean, we haven't always had fire. You can blunder around and trip on something and get bit by a snake or a scorpion or whatever, ambushed by a predator or any number of things. But we have kind of conquered that with technology these days, but we still have that primitive caveman brain. So sometimes, I mean, fear can keep you alive for a certain sense, but it also can lead to not developing the tools that would help you thrive. Right? Like in the movie. If you're just sitting back and staying at home, you are not out testing your immune system. You are not out exposing it to new threats. You are letting it wither away. If you're just sitting in the cave, you're not exposing yourself to new threats, overcoming new obstacles, learning about the world around you, and developing strategies and techniques to deal with those threats. So it may keep you alive, sort of, but it hobbles you and it gimps you from fully mastering your environment. You are just trying to exist. You are not trying to thrive and spread out and multiply and, you know, have any kind of a civilization or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, he's in a very precarious situation with there being so few people, only two breeding members in this entire six group. So yeah, it's you know, if one of them dies, it's, you know, time for some incest, I guess, or something, but it's not great. So I can understand that, but it does handicap you from, you know, you're going to be blind to the dangers you don't see if you don't kind of go out and brave your environment
and encounter them and have awareness of them and things of that nature. And granted, we have just this microcosm of this one family and this one other species of human. But if there were a larger group, you would have various risk tolerance levels exhibited in the behavior of the various people. And so some people would be more risk averse, others would be more willing to take risks and have the consequent negative repercussions and positive outcomes that result from that. And that's one of the things that helps to create civilization and create a thriving society and a human life worth living, I think. And I want to mention it might be Ben Franklin or Thomas Jefferson. It's been a while since I've done the U.S. history
Dangerous
stuff.
Liberty?
Yes.
I think that's Franklin.
I'd rather a dangerous liberty than a peaceful servitude.
I think that's Franklin. I could be wrong.
Sounds
yeah,
right.
Well, there's various quotes that are of similar vein and from
quotes.
These various guys, and we're a bunch of dummies.
That's
well,
true.
I'm not speaking for Rachel. I'm speaking for the top two morons here. But I'm inspired by quotes like that. I think people should be able to make their own decisions on what level of risk they're willing to accept. And I don't accept the premise that living a normal life is putting others at risk. It's not like speeding or ignoring stoplights or just willy-nilly firing guns anywhere. It is going through the normal course of life. We are surrounded by trillions and trillions of viruses and bacteria and other pathogenic things. Your immune system has developed over millennia to be able to handle many of these things. And if this was about health, they would be talking about boosting that immunity, being healthier, eating healthy foods, getting enough exercise, vitamin D, sunlight, getting out, having social interaction. I don't know how many articles I saw over the past couple of years about depression and the effects of stress on health and how people are hurt by words and that they're having trauma and PTSD from all of these things. And yet no mention of anything related to anything other than you must isolate, restrict your airway and put a substance in you. And that is the only metric by which any health outcome is measured at present. What this has to do with the movie,
clearly the epitome
not
of
much. But I just had that rant in me. I had to get it out.
That was a good rant,
well,
Daniel.
The,
I think it's appropriate.
One of the comments that Nick Cage made towards the end of the movie, he's trying to shove him back into another cave. And the whole family refuses to go in. And he's like, but the rules have kept us alive. And then he makes that what has resonated in my soul, which you guys mentioned already earlier, but she's like, that wasn't living. That was just not dying. So, and I feel like that's what the environment or the people around us and the government is trying to tell us. The rules are keeping you alive. And, you know, and nobody's standing up and saying, that's not living. That's just not dying. They've just passively accepted that, yes, we just follow the rules because you said so. We don't ask questions about why the rules are there, how effective they are. We just follow what you tell us to do. And it's almost like, you know, at least for all Nick Cage's shortcomings, at least he had a survival instinct. At this point, it's almost like the survival instinct has been bred out of the population, not just here in America, but in other parts of the world as well. If the government says, well, you're non-essential, you've got to stay home, you can't eat. And they're like, okay, I don't have to go provide for my family or pay my mortgage. Well, now you don't have to pay your mortgage because the government says you don't have to.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like the drive to get out there and conquer and slay the day and beat what's coming towards you is just, that's no longer exists within people, and they're willing to their detriment, no matter how detrimental it is to them as individuals or to their finances, to just go along with what the government says to do.
Well, I think perverse incentives produce perverse outcomes. And a lot of these things are driven by incentives to not work, to not pay rent, to not do various things. Also, there is a divide and conquer strategy, and I really have a way of like verifying this, but I think that it is intentional that we are not to see resistance in other countries in the news. You have to really dig to see protests in Australia or France or Italy, but occasionally it slips through and you do see it. And it is heartening to see that because you wouldn't be aware of it otherwise. And not being aware of it and thinking it's not happening is a scary thought to me, like that people are just acquiescing and just rolling over and just taking this. But I think that's part of the strategy. They don't want you to see other people standing up against it. I forget what it is. It's I've seen it in meme form, but it's basically like the first people to stand up, they're the nails that get hammered down. But
the ones that hit the barbed wire. Yep.
Yeah. And then more and more stand up. And then eventually everyone standing up and the enforcement arm is like so much smaller and outnumbered, back to that tiny dot from the Larkin Rose video. Posted on the show notes page, of course. Also, I'll post a link to The Most Dangerous Superstition, which is a great book that Larkin Rose wrote about the religion of statism, basically. But I think it is intentional that we are separated, divided, and isolated, and then not made aware of people who are like-minded who disagree with what's going on. Granted, there are a lot of people who are buying it hook, line, and sinker, and it's hard to blame them in a lot of respects, because you read any headline and you look at any mainstream newscast, it's just hitting you left and right over be afraid, scary number after scary number, and then shifting the blame onto people. And that's that's the worst part of it, because it's more and more becoming apparent that it's totally unfounded. And yet they're basically inciting people to other people who don't agree with them and treat them as if they are violent and evil. And that is a recipe for violence. I think that something will eventually happen, and it's only going to serve, of course, as further justification for a lot of these increased measures of security and control, which is kind of unfortunate. So it's got to be like a smarter kind of resistance. Like there's that John Lennon quote, you know, they'll try to provoke you to violence because violence is what they know. They'll flick your face, poke you in the nose. I forget the exact quote, but you can't play that game. You gotta play smarter than that. And I don't know if it goes back to the, back when stand-up comedians were edgy, like the court jesters could say things to the king and get away with it. They have the George Carlins, the Lenny Bruces, the rest. There's very few of them like that anymore. But, you know, you just don't pay respect to them, make fun of them. I don't know. It's almost like we have to adopt the emotional attack. make their feelings hurt, because that seems to be the only language they understand.
Yeah, it's classic divide and conquer. Isolate, overcome, make them feel alone through their, the fourth branch, the media. So, they do that because they know if it ever does reach a critical mass of resistance and people realize that they're not alone and everybody is like standing up, then government will all of a sudden, they'll flip and they'll go, yeah. And they'll pretend to be with the crowd the entire time. Like they weren't the ones that were just pushing the exact opposite thing 2 seconds ago. And if that ever did happen, you cannot let them get away with that bullshit.
I wonder if that's what Scott Morrison is getting at. He's trying to get ahead of that curve because he's seen the resistance.
Maybe.
I mean, that would be a white pill, and I think it's a stretch.
Yeah.
But anyway. So we are actually running against time, unfortunately, already. I think it's because I've been sidetracking us into non-movie related rants, sort of associated with, inspired by the movie. But do you guys have any notes or any points you'd like to make before we get into final summary review and we give it a count of, I don't know, he kept counting like how many members of the family there are. And by the end of it, there were 10. I think he counted the big parakeet cat.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, 10 tribesmen or members of their tribe will be our rating schedule here. But Rachel, do you have any other points you wanted to bring up for discussion before we get into that?
I mean, I think we hit what the most important points were, that, you know, the dad thought it was his job to protect everyone. And I feel like there's another group of people who feel like that's their job too, to protect everyone to death at this point. But
yeah,
you know,
that paternal instinct, treating us all like children.
Yeah.
But in this, in this case, it was true though. I mean, he was the father. Right.
Right. Okay. That was actually his role as the father, but we've got somebody trying to play daddy that's not related to us, and we're adults and we don't need them telling us what to do.
Absolutely.
We can, like you said, make our own risk assessments and decide, you know, do we want to go and explore this new thing, or do we want to stay home in the cave? So.
Indeed. Yes. I liked how the guy character was an inventor for the most part. I liked how he, you know, his inventions in his, I don't know, creations or whatever, instantly made their lives better. Now, if there were more people, and then you could see how he would invent something and then he would start trading it with another tribe and he'd get all kinds of stuff and everybody would prosper from this new technology and it would spread throughout the land. If there were more characters in the film, it'd be more obvious how his inventions were creating wealth and creating a better life for everybody in the movie. But as it is, all we get are just the, oh, well, now we can cross this coral now. And that's a good thing, right? And we got shoes. That's pretty sweet. We can walk on stuff now that we couldn't, it hurt our feet to walk on before. So we can walk farther maybe in a day and faster. I mean, although if we want to be accurate about it, I'm not so entirely sure. Well, there is evidence that who was it? That hunter guy that was found in the mountains. I forget his name, but he was found with these shoes on, some kind made out of like hemp and rope or something like that. Kind of like the earliest Birkenstocks or something like that. It was really actually they I think they recreated them and they found out that they were like really really good shoes. So that's kind of cool.
Was that I forget the name of it, but there was like a guy found in like Walla Walla, like Eastern Washington down there.
Guy I'm thinking of, he has a mustache and he's a tiny little hunter. He was like maybe 5 feet tall tops, maybe 4'9" or 4'8" or something. And he was found in maybe the Alps or some mountain range. And he was almost perfectly preserved. Like he had all his clothes on, his hat on. He had like a wound in his head, a skull that had killed
him. Okay. Sounds vaguely familiar. I think we'll be able to find it. I'll do some searching around, put it on show notes page. Sounds interesting.
Okay. Anyway, I remember him having shoes on that were like really good shoes. So that's kind of cool.
Where'd you get those kicks, man?
You got them at the Nike store. You know, he rocks it.
Are those the new Leaf Jordans?
Yeah. He probably got killed for his kicks, probably.
Yeah, it's a problem still to today.
Yep.
All right. Well, very, very good. Very good. Well, Robert, why don't you just keep going with your final summary review on this and give us a score of your members of your tribe.
All right. Well, I didn't even know it was Emma Stone until I saw the credits. And I was like, holy crap, that was Emma Stone? Because I'm a big Emma Stone fan, but I guess I need to see a face or else she just disappears. I mean, I realized that it was Eep, but I didn't quite get that Emma Stone vibe off of her. But whatever, that's fine. Nick Cage obviously was instantly recognizable. That's about it. I didn't really recognize any of the other actors. Oh, except for, of course.
Clark Kishman.
No, Grandma. Deadpool.
Oh, Deadpool took me a while.
Oh, did it? Yeah, no, yeah. He was right away for me.
I knew Cloris Leachman right away, but that's because she was on that. It was a show about a guy who was like a single dad. I forget the name of it. What's the name of it? It's like on Fox like 10 years ago.
Oh, it's like Raising Arizona or something. I know it's not Arizona, but I know what you're talking
about.
It's like
a baby's name is in the title of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh. I'm getting old, man. Getting old. Anyway, sorry to sidetrack you over, but she was Mima in that, and very recognizable voice.
Okay. Yeah, I had heard the lady before that played the granny, but I couldn't quite place it. Like I didn't know the name or a face. But anyway, it was better than I thought it was going to be. I still think that they kind of churn these movies out too fast. I think they could stand to be a little bit more well honed, maybe added in a little bit more jokes, like real jokes, then maybe give something a little bit more for the adults than just the, I don't know, something pretty to look at. The slapstickiness was a complete miss for me. I grew up watching, you know, Looney Tunes and all that. And I don't even know if Looney Tunes ever made me laugh. Maybe I'm just more into, I don't know, some other kind of jokes, other kinds of humor, dark humor. I don't know, but this movie wasn't made for me, and I'm perfectly fine with that. And I'm sure the creators are perfectly fine with their $500 million, and they didn't get a penny from me, but I'm sure they didn't need it. So, but other than that, you know, it's a solid story. Like, you know, it's an obvious out of water slash adventure story slash road trip movie kind of thing. I liked that they invented the landscape of the movie, the landscape of the world, where they were going towards this one location, even though it was just like they didn't have a real clear idea. And I'm still skeptical about how Deadpool knew there was going to be a, you know, fire and brimstone end of the world. I didn't follow that. Like, all of a sudden he knew there was going to be earthquakes and this whole area is going to get destroyed. How did he know that? Caveman Adamus or something. I don't know. But I liked the varying terrain. I gave an excuse for the designers and the animators to create a quite striking, beautiful world with all kinds of different colors and all kinds of different amalgamations of ancient creatures. I mean, it was basically just like, what if an elephant was really tiny and it lived under bushes? I mean, you know, it's not super creative. And what if a big old kitty cat had tusks? I mean, you know, it's not amazing stuff, but it was colorful and well rendered enough. And, you know, I enjoyed it, the visual look of it after all was said and done. And I didn't like the dad's turn that was so fast, but I did like his character for the most part. And then the whole story of living, you know, you got to live. That's so deeply ingrained in my libertarian brain and just my human mind that it is absolutely an essential part of what it is to be a human being. I spent enough time sitting inside my house throughout my life that when someone tells me that now you need to do that and it's good for you, I think I speak with a little bit of experience in saying that no, maybe no, it isn't for me, at least. Maybe other people make that calculation and decide it's right for them, and that's fine. That's you decide for what's good for you. But hopefully you're making that decision based on looking at all the evidence and deciding what's best for you, not because somebody told you. That's my fervent wish. But the movie is solid. I don't go in expecting anything amazing, but it's I'm glad we talked about it here today. Thank you for Rachel for bringing it up. And I'm going to give this it's between a 6 and a 7. It's closer to I'll say a 7. It's not quite a 7. No, it's not a 7. Yeah. Okay. I'm giving it a 6, but it's strong 6. It's a good 6. 6 family members out of 10.
All right. So it's a high 6 for you there. And the show was Raising Hope. That was the name of the show.
There you go. That's what
and
it was.
Cloris Leachman, she did the sequel, The Croods 2, the New Age or the Dawn of the New Age or whatever it is. But then she died actually recently, just in January of this year at the ripe old age of 94. So it was, wow. It was probably a COVID death. But
probably.
Struck down in the prime of her life.
Yeah. I enjoyed her work. She was also, being as we have kids, she was doing Creative Galaxy, which is an Amazon Prime like kids show where they do crafts and colorful characters and whatnot. And yeah, so she will be missed. RIP Cloris Leachman. You know, the other thing that just dawned on me when you were speaking about being at your home and being told to do that and how it's not for you. I recall people telling us that we're the selfish ones for not wanting to do something different than we've done our entire lives. Introduce something else to our body we haven't done our entire lives. But it seems to me that it's more selfish to demand that of others so that you, the selfish person demanding that of others, can then go out and integrate into society. Why not, if you're afraid, why don't you go back into your cave and hide from life and let the rest of us go on living. And assuming the risk tolerances that we're willing to risk, because we've seen the numbers and we're comfortable with that risk.
Well, the bubble boy didn't require that everybody else wear a bubble. He just wore the bubble himself.
And he wanted the moops to be recognized as not the right answer.
What is the moops? Yes.
That bubble boy was kind of a jerk. He probably would make everybody else wear the bubble.
Yeah, he was a bit of a dick. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
You'd think he'd have a nicer attitude if he rarely got visitors, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all about a matter of perspective, though. I mean, he could argue that he is in the non-bubble and everyone else outside beyond is actually in the bubble.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. So I'll go and then we'll bring Rachel for your summer in review. And mine will be pretty quick. The Croods. I agree with Robert. The animation is a notch below the Pixar stuff, yet a notch above a lot of the other animated fare that you'll find for kids these days. I think this story had a pretty good premise. It gave us plenty of things to talk about. But beyond the premise, the story kind of meanders a bit and gets a little goofy. You sort of have to accept that there are no other people in this world any longer, even though Guy seems to be from a different society of these more higher evolved creative types. But we don't see anything about them. It also seems odd that the theory of plate tectonics, rather than being a slow moving process, seems to happen in cataclysmic events. Which seems to run counter to how I learned it, but I guess you do need to have a dangerous and exciting cataclysmic thing kind of happen if he's talking about the end of the world. Though it also seems weird that all they had to do was get to this other side of this chasm randomly that was beyond this mountain. I don't know. Yeah, it's a kid's movie. Maybe it's not supposed to make sense. But overall, it's entertaining. It's fun. It has some meaty subjects to talk about. It does bring up the whole concept of mere survival versus actually living and enjoying life and what it means to be truly human. I think that's a good message. The voice cast, pretty good. Excellent, even. I enjoy Nick Cage, Ryan Reynolds, Emma Stone, Cloris Leachman, Karen Keener, and the rest. So overall, it's a decent movie. And I will actually bump this up to 7 family members for my review, just to one up Robert, just a hair. He was a high 6 and I'm right at 7. So I'm a one upper. So Rachel, let's get your take on the Croods.
Well, I think if I had not been the parent of a 4-year-old at the time that it came out, I don't know that I necessarily would have made a special trip to go and watch it. Although I am I am an Emma Stone fan, but I don't know that I would have just gone to watch an animated feature with Emma Stone in it or Ryan Reynolds. I mean, if you can't see Ryan Reynolds in real life, then what's the point of seeing a Ryan Reynolds movie, to be honest with you? But I enjoyed rewatching it. My now 12-year-old, when he saw that I was watching The Croods, he was like, "You're watching The Croods?" Because, you know, he's too cool for animated movies now that he's at the advanced age of 12. So my 12-year-old would probably rate this like 0 family members out of 10. But I think I'm going to agree with Robert here and give it about a 6 out of 10. Just as an adult. Now, as a kid, you know, like I said, it was great when we had a house full of young kids and they loved it and it was entertaining and we didn't have to listen to them argue and it was beautiful. It was a wonderful 2 hours in our lives at that time. Yes. So, you know, now if I'd rated this thing back in 2013, I probably would have rated it 8 or 9, but I think a 6 out of 10, because I do see some holes in the story, but I mean, it's a kid's movie at the end of the day. We're not the target market. Clearly it's our younger children that are the target market. And at the time my kids loved it and they would watch it and we could put it on for road trips and it would entertain them. So I would say 6 out of 10. And it's, I never really expected to, we bought the DVD because the kids liked it, but I never really expected to go back since my son's too old to watch it. I never expected to go back and watch it because it's a kid's movie. But just this past year, that line, you know, that wasn't living, that was just not dying. I mean, I've just like felt that in my bones. Not that I'm kind of a hermit ordinarily, but yeah. 2020 made me want to not be a hermit. You know, I went over to the Mises Summit in September, October of last year. I mean, I actually got on a plane and flew for the first time in 15 years. So it's just like this, you don't tell me what to do. I'm going to do what you tell me not to do. Like this rebellious phase. I never thought I'd be so rebellious in my 40s.
Yeah. So here you are, Rachel, you're actually doing the Rage Against the Machine stuff. Meanwhile, Rage Against the Machine is saying, thank you, I'll do what you tell me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that was me when I was 18. Okay. I'll do what you tell. I'll do what you say.
Yeah. So very good. So you give it a 6. Robert gives it a 6. I give it a 7. My kids would probably give it a 7 or an 8, but it's no Paw Patrol, which is clearly a 10. So do check that out. It's on Paramount Plus at the time being, and also in theaters. Though, you know, we watched it at home, and I can't imagine, like, I'm a bit of a hermit myself. So the lockdown, I mean, didn't affect me so much on an individual level, but just the concept of it just grinds my gears. It really makes me mad. But I do like the convenience of being able to watch first run entertainment at home. So here I am.
I still like going to the movies better. It's like, I mean, if it's a movie that I don't really want to see, I'll sit at the house. But we went and watched Free Guy last weekend and, you know, did the whole popcorn and soda thing and enjoyed it. And I thought that movie was pretty funny. So there's a promo for Free Guy. If anyway, and it's not streaming there. I think they're only showing it in theaters.
Oh, interesting. Okay. But a decent movie. I've heard that it's, is it a video game or comic book inspired?
It's based on a comic book. The Ryan Reynolds character is supposed to be an NPC, and then he turns into like this hero in the game. It's like some sort of virtual reality type game.
That could be an interesting one.
Yeah, keep in mind I am not a movie snob, so keep that in mind.
Oh yes,
yeah. But I enjoyed it. But again, it's got Ryan Reynolds, and seeing Ryan Reynolds on the big screen is totally worth it.
Yeah, I enjoy Deadpool. I like him. I liked him in Waiting way back in the day.
I don't think I've seen that. I remember him from Two Guys and a Girl in a Pizza Place.
Okay, yeah, I think that was
old TV show back in the, what, 90s or early 2000s?
Right. He couldn't necessarily get away with the language in that.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, and Waiting, I think you'd like. You'd probably like
that.
Yeah,
Free Guy is only PG-13. I think there were maybe one or two F-bombs.
Okay. All right.
You get at least one, I think, on a PG-13 movie. So I was surprised. Of course, we also went to watch that Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson movie, too. And the
Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I said the name wrong, but I think I did it intentionally.
I think you're right. It's like the Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife. I think you had it right.
Oh, okay. Well, I lucked out. Having Robert as a childhood friend who we've developed a relationship and then continued that, he went on the journey with me and we started doing this show. And that's how we met you, Rachel. So I've lucked out in many ways more than one. So thank you again for being our guest tonight. And I hope you can stick around for a little bit of the Patreon bonus content, Kathleen Turner Overdrive, which is the bookend to the pre-show bonus content that we had available for Patreon supporters. So people can find that at lastnighters.com/Patreon. And people can find links to your shows on lastnighters.com/192. I know I've said it like 5 times. Yeah, 192. Cannabis Heals Me and Just Add Liberty, both excellent shows. And speaking of excellent shows, we're going to have an excellent guest next week, the great Pete Quinones of the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast, making his triumphant return to our show. Granted, not doing a Kevin Costner flick. He's done all of the long form Kevin Costner flicks. And also did Casablanca, which is one of the greatest films of all time. Mm. He is coming back for an Oliver Stone movie starring James Woods, of all people, who has a fire Twitter account, by the way.
Yes.
Doing Salvador. And I have not heard of this movie.
Me neither.
But he brought it up and he said, oh, fuck, dude, I love this movie. Watch it. Let me know what you think. And I was like, let's do it. So I haven't even seen it yet, but I said, let's do it, especially if he likes it. He's a good dude. And I take things that he likes as strong, strong recommendations. So that will be the episode next week, the James Woods movie from 1986, Salvador. Probably got overshadowed by some Schwarzenegger flicks back then, like Predator and Commando, stuff like that.
Hmm. Yeah, never heard of it, but sounds like a good movie to watch for the show. We'll see.
Yeah, it's on that HBO. So accessible for both of us, I think. So any final words, Rachel, before we sign off and get into that bonus content?
It's been fun, guys. I always enjoy coming, like I said, coming and chatting with movies about you. So it's been a good time. Y'all have interesting perspectives on things that I would never catch. So it's always great coming in here and y'all's perspective on stuff.
All right. Well, thank you. And we appreciate having you as a guest, giving us that feminine angle on things from time to time. It's normally a sausage fest around here. So we do appreciate mixing it up just a little bit.
Well, so, I don't know how much femininity I bring to it, but you know, it's there is no sausage here, so I mean,
slightly more than Daniel brings.
Right, yeah. It's if anything, I'm a blend between the two of you.
A nice fine roast.
All right, yes. I know how good my fucking coffee is. I'm the one who buys it. All right, well, with that, we're gonna say goodnight from last night, everyone. We'll see you guys next week with Picanones for Salvador. Maximum freedom. Peace out. All right. And we have just a few more minutes of the actual Anarchy podcast. I don't really have a whole lot extra to say on this, but Dan Reed, the culinary libertarian, who's been a guest with us most recently for Mrs. Doubtfire and also did Ratatouille. He's in our Golden Circle group for our Patreon supporters and prior guests, and he gets to watch the live streams and get some exclusive content that way. And he posted a comment on this here live stream we posted in there saying that he loves this movie, great movie, The Croods. So I think he would give it a higher score than I did. We need to get him back on sometime. But Robert and Rachel, any final things that, you know, I always find myself, oh, I should have said that when the show's over and we sort of have another moment of opportunity here.
A moment of clarity, if you will.
I think I said what I wanted to say. I will say one thing, which is unrelated to The Croods, but when you mention Kathleen Turner Overdrive, I always think about V.I. Warshawski. I know most people probably think like Romancing the Stone and Jewel of the Nile, but I have the movie of V.I. Warshawski. I was, for whatever reason, I always really liked that. Have y'all ever seen that one?
I don't think I've seen it, but I remember when it came out. She's like this badass, like, private detective type. Yeah. I remember seeing, the cuts, or what do you call it? Trailers mm-hmm. on TV back in the day. But where Kathleen Turner Overdrive comes from is from High Fidelity. Jack Black's band's name used to be called Sonic Death Monkey, but then they change it to Kathleen Turner Overdrive for the final performance where he sings. Is it Marvin Gaye, Sexual Healing?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And he can actually sing. He's got chops. So it's pretty impressive.
Doesn't he like write songs and actually play as well?
Yeah. With Kyle Gass in Tenacious D. And they did a movie called Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny. And maybe they did a sequel to that. I don't recall exactly. But Jeremiah Martin of Reel on Reels, they did a review of that movie maybe a couple of years ago. So it's really good. I'll post that on the show notes page because they did a really fine job of doing shows. And he's a bit of a movie critic, like more official than Robert and I. He's been a guest for Finding Nemo and
The Matrix. Not that hard, honestly. It's a little
hard. Yeah, it's not hard. It's not hard. just watch one of our shows. You'll find out how not hard that is. Super soft.
No, I would be the worst movie critic because I'm just going in there to be entertained, not to pick it apart.
Until you come on and talk to us. Then you have plenty to say.
Well, then I have to go back and watch it and be like, okay, what can I talk about here? Oh, one thing I didn't say. Okay, so getting back to our subject at hand. One thing I didn't say. So like in the opening sequence, when Eve first runs out and goes and lays on the rock, her armpits are hairless.
Like, oh, yeah.
What kind of cavewoman doesn't have hairy armpits?
Yeah. For me, the thing I noticed about her, and she's supposed to be like the love interest for a guy. I mean, she's built like a freaking linebacker. I mean, I get it. You know, there's scarcity, right? And so the value of the opposite sex is probably higher than it would have been had there been more options available. But yeah, I didn't see a lot of appeal and eat.
Yeah, but think of how useful she'd be around. I mean, she could like lift heavy stuff. She'd take the garbage out. She can go kill dinner for the night.
She's strong as hell. Yeah.
She's got those wide childbearing hips.
Yeah, you got the brains and then she's got the brawn. I mean, man, it's a pretty sweet deal.
Okay, okay.
Power couple. No. They're a power couple.
A modern day power couple. You got the beta male and the beefy broad. Can I say that? Is that appropriate? No.
Okay. You can say beefy broad. Yeah, you can
I'm not offended.
You could BB it.
BB. All right. Well, Rachel, again, this has been a lot of fun, and people can find you at Cannabis Heals Me and Just Add Liberty. And the show notes page for this will be actualanarchy.com/249, which means everyone that the Pete Quinones episode is the big 250. That's like a big deal, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
The quarter millennial episode. Holy smoke, Ronies. Right.
I don't think we're making 500 or 1,000 like Tom Woods. He's approaching 2,000 right now. He does five days a week.
A daily show. Yeah, we do once a week. We got to go for five times as long to make as many episodes.
Right. And we're already old men, or it feels that way anyway. But we'll keep it going for a while longer. I sometimes question the value of what we're doing, especially with what's been happening in the world and whether we should continue to devote resources to critiquing movies. But I don't know. It's just kind of become a routine, you know, it's just like, all right, we just keep doing it. We haven't missed a week yet. And it's been going on for almost 5 years. So.
Well, I think that goes back to the whole living part. You know, you probably don't do this because you're making lots of money at it. This is something you enjoy doing. You get a chance to hang out with Robert and other people. So it's not just, this isn't a form of entertainment for you. This is a form of enriching your life. So, because I'll be honest with you, I kind of have thought that too about some other things. I'm like, well, I should really be doing this, 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 and this. But it's like, I enjoy talking to interesting people. I mean, if life is supposed to be about living, let's go out and do things that we enjoy doing, even if they're not necessarily the most productive use of our time. We're not in the end times yet. So we can still go out and have fun and not have to worry about living in our cave and keeping the water and the lights on.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that white pill, Rachel. I've needed it. Robert mentioned in the pre-show, I was pretty black pilled, but that actually does make me feel a little bit better. And even though we don't make a lot of money from this, we do have some Patreon supporters and we're always welcome to have more. So hit us up at actualanarchy.com/Patreon if you are interested in sending some money our way. But we get paid in other ways. And one of those ways is people who've reached out to us and let us know that they enjoy the show or that they've changed their minds and see things in a different way as a result of the things that we've talked about. We've had a few of those notches in our belts, and that always felt really good. So, and we've got the inertia, you know, we can just kind of keep it going, and it does give us a reason to engage with other people and for Robert and I to talk. I mean, we don't see each other in person very often anymore. There's some distance involved with that. But I do get to talk to him every week, and I get to talk to interesting people and who I consider now friends like you, Rachel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my son and I are leaving on Sunday for a 2-week road trip, and we're staying with several people that I've met online. And so they've now become friends to where I'm comfortable enough going and staying at them with my child. Now, I will say I'll be carrying my concealed carry just in case.
Make sure you got reciprocity.
Well, I do have reciprocity in every state except for one state that I'm going to. And I've already looked up the rules for what I would need to do in order to be within the bounds, because I can't afford to have a felony on my record. But I mean, I would never let my son go and stay with people he met on the internet. So, I mean, I think that's a testament to how incredible this community, and they're not community that lives here, but they're community that I would feel comfortable enough going and staying with. I mean, because they, I don't know.
They're part of your ideological tribe.
Yes, absolutely. And I feel comfortable enough to go and stay. And it's not like that, you know, when you meet people you don't know and it's just that awkward silence and you have to make small talk with them. You don't have to make small talk with these people in the liberty movement. You can talk about substantive conversations on things that you both agree.
Which watch list are you on?
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. And now they've tracked my phone to close to Washington, D.C. I'm going to be in big trouble now. Oh, I visited some Civil War battlefields. Whoops-a-daisy.
Yeah. So, don't get many ideas.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, that's a really cool thing about the Liberty movement is that there's a lot of neat people involved. And it's not just, you know, when I was still a plain vanilla conservative Republican. I was never interested in people that I would identify as libertarian, because I'm like, well, they're all just weirdos that have purple hair and whatever. And that's not the only people in this movement. And now I'm like, well, I don't really care what color hair they are, as long as they believe in freedom and they don't try to force me to make my hair purple. So.
All right. Well, well said. And that actually gives me some ideas, because we're actually considering a bit of a cross-country trip. Maybe I will reach out to people I've met along the way, and maybe we'll make some stops that way. That could be
Man,
really
good. If y'all make it down to Texas, our door's wide open to you. Yeah. Two extra bedrooms, so plenty of places to sleep. And like I said, y'all are welcome here anytime.
All right. Well, we might hold you to that. So thank you for that.
That sounds great, man. Absolutely. That'd be awesome. I'd love it.
All right. Well, thanks again. We should wind this one down. We are actually going a little bit long here, but we'll get some more Kathleen Turner Overdrive bonus content after this. But join us next week for Salvador with Pete Quinones of the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. And you can find Rachel's stuff at Just Add Liberty and Cannabis Heals Me. And find the show notes and more for this at actuallyandica.com/249. And with that, we will say maximum freedom, everyone. Peace out.
Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do 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 do.